بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. The work an individual is supposed to be doing in this world, Allah Ta'ala prepares him in that particular way, what he is designed to do, what he is destined to do, and Allah Ta'ala prepares him in a similar way. His outlook, his understanding, his behavior, everything will go in that direction. كُلٌّ مُيَسَّرٌ لِمَا خُلِقَ لَهُ. Whatever you have been created for, then you will be inclined to that type of character, that type of ways, that type of conduct. So a Nabi is designed basically to accomplish a mission of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This is the work. This is why he has been sent. مَا أَرْسَلْنَاكَ إِلَّا رَحْمَةً لِلْعَالَمِينَ لَقَدْ مَنَّ اللَّهُ عَلَى الْمُؤْمِنِينَ إِذْ بَعَثَ فِيهِمْ رَسُولًا مِّنْهُمْ يَتْلُو عَلَيْهِمْ آيَاتِهِ وَيُزَكِّيهِمْ. So this is the mission of a Nabi, that he is supposed to convey the message of Allah Ta'ala. بَلِّغْ مَا أُنزِلَ إِلَيْكَ مِنْ رَبِّكَ. Hence his whole outlook and his concern will be similar. His fikr, his outlook, his mission, he will look at the whole world in a different way. See, like I call three people in this building, each person will look at the building in a different way. An architect will look in a different way. I call a carpenter and I need some carpentry to be done. He will look at the building from a different perspective. You call an electrician or a plumber, then he will look at it in a different way. So he is designed for a certain work. The work that he is designed for, he is created for, then he will look at it in that light. Okay? So basically this world, when a Nabi is sent to this world, then his whole outlook will be different. See? So understand this. Over Palanpuri Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi used to give an example. Say someone is in the button manufacturing business. So wherever he is, he will look at people's buttons. What is that design? What is the quality? Now he's sitting in a tabligh gathering. He may be listening to the bayan as well, but his eyes will be open. What he's got? Let me see what's new. What's in the market now? Right? He's in the masjid, he'll look at that. He's in the bazaar, he will look at that. He is in a wedding, in a function amongst other friends. So he'll be eating and enjoying himself, but his eyes will be open. What type of button this person has got? So much so that even if he's in the Qabristan also he'll look, what button this person has got. See? So that person's outlook is different. It's several people, but they're looking at the same thing in a total different way. If you bring a pious person, pious wali, perhaps you invited him to a wealthy person's house, right? So he will look at the wealthy person differently. He says, Bichara, this person, what problem he's fallen into? If he can only turn to the hereafter, prepare himself, get inclined, get onto the right footing, right? So he will look at him in a different way. you call another businessman, so he will think to himself, in how can I make some business from this person? He's, for example, in the oil game. Now, how can I make some business from him? I know that sunflower seeds, get it from so-and-so farmer in OFS, must get it to him, and how can I clinch the deal, what commission I'll get? So he's looking at it in a different way. And if you call a person who's a technician or something, he knows in the, or he's in the oil game, says, hey, I know this game, I know how to operate the machines and all that, and the byproducts, what can be done, I know all about it. So let me try and confirm a job with him. Let me speak about it. And if it is a rogue or a thief, so you think, now, how must I arrange something for myself? So different people will look at the same thing, but in different ways. Each person will have a different outlook towards the same thing. This is the beauty of this world of Allah Ta'ala. It's one and the same thing, but each person looks at that article in a different way. So Nabi's outlook will be totally different. His outlook, his understanding, his goal, and his reasoning will be totally different. He is created with superior intellect, very, very mature, totally, absolutely mature, superior intellect, looking far ahead of things. So the Nabi looks totally differently. As though, for that moment, we cannot relate to him. We cannot relate to him. Like a small child, the father that is experienced and kind, and he grabs away the chocolate from the small child, or he grabs away some sweet or something. So the child feels that there is no greater enemy than my father, that he's grabbing this thing away from me. Knife, or a sweet, or a gun, father is grabbing it away. And the child feels to himself that there is no greater enemy. But the father knows that there is nobody more affectionate to the child than myself. So the Nabi will turn you away from all this business, all this dunya, and getting stuck up into the dunya. The Nabi will get you out of it. Now the ordinary person feels, why is he interfering? Why is he meddling around in my affairs? Why is he interfering in my affairs? So he will think like this. But the Nabi will think, I don't want any disaster to come to this person here. I don't want this person to get ruined, to get destroyed. Okay? Like Shuaib alayhi salam, when he is inviting his people, then ta'amuruka as-salatuka ta'amuruka an-natruka, was that a verse? نَعْبُدَ مَا يَعْبُدُ أَبَاؤُنَا أَوْ أَنْ نَفْعَلَ فِي أَمْوَالِنَا مَا نَشَاءُ أَوْ أَنْ نَفْعَلَ فِي أَمْوَالِنَا مَا نَشَاءُ. Is your deen, salat we call mean deen, whatever it is your deen preventing you? Is your deen commanding you that you prevent us from all this business that we are doing? Is your deen and your prayer, etc., is that preventing you? Is it commanding you to prevent us? Is your deen commanding you to prevent us from our business? Let us carry on with our business whichever way you want to. Why are you coming to put spanners in our business? Okay. So the Nabi looks at the whole thing in a different way. And the common person, because his intelligence and his understanding is very basic, very immature, he looks at the thing different, like a small child. And the Nabi looks at it from that perspective. He looks at it from this perspective. So this great maturity, understanding, in fact, the greatest maturity is the Nabi's. He sees it right through. You can see from here, right to Qiyamah and Jannah, Jahannam, you can see it right through. The picture is so clear to him. And for us, the picture of the hereafter is so blurred, it's so blurred as though there are layers and layers of mist between us and the hereafter. We can't just see the road ahead of us. And for him, everything is clear. He can see it. Like, you're doing this business, you in interest, and how it's related to Jahannam. How you're getting connected, and how you're getting destroyed to Jahannam, the Nabi is seeing it. The child cannot see death in that life wire. He cannot see it. He can see the elderly person can see it. Mature person, you can see it. You can see this is imminent death. This is high voltage, high power wire. You just touch it, you just interfere with it, and you know you're dead. So the one that is mature, you can see it. You can see it very well. You can see it clearly. And he will try his best to remove this child from it. When the child is in his immaturity, he will feel, what a stupid father I got. I can't even have my own things in this world. My own freedom, my own comfort. He's stopping me from everything. Rather kill me. Okay. So the father sees it in a different way, the one that is mature. And this child sees it in a different way. So the Nabi sees these things in a different way, in a different light, in a different perspective. That I don't want these people to suffer eternal doom, eternal destruction. I don't want them to suffer. Now how must I get them out of it? So the Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, when he comes, any Nabi comes, then this is what he will look at. He will, because of his vision, because of his understanding, and because he can relate so well to the hereafter, he more or less can see now what are the causes of human destruction. You can see it. As opposed to us, the Nabi can see it very clearly. The picture is absolutely clear. Our picture is not so clear. We may have something, some information is not fitting in, some information is incomplete, unclear. But the Nabi, every information is clear to him. Utitu mafatihul ard. And ilmul awwalina wal akhirin. So the Nabi is given everything that you can see right through. We can show it to you that how these things are related. Like how you can see the relationship between a life wire and you holding it. What's the relationship? You can see it. So the Nabi can see these things also straight away. You can see it. So then when he comes to this world, then this is the first thing that he will do. That how must I save humanity from ruin? What are the causes? And then how do we save humanity from the ruin? What are the causes of human destruction? What are the causes of them inviting the anger and the wrath of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? And how do we go about curing this? What do we do? Okay. So he's got a great task, a very, very great massive task on his head. That I need to save humanity from this destruction. They're going on the path of suicide, on the path of ruin, self-ruin. Now how do I save them out? How do I bring them out of this? How do I bail them out of this big problem? So the Nabi will make a survey. He'll look for the principal causes. You see, like in Tasawwuf, the approach of the Mashaykh generally is quite unique. One approach is when I see a wrong, right, I will correct the wrong straight away. I see you, for example, with your trouser below your ankle, so I will stop you. Or someone is shaving his beard, I will stop him, right? So that is one approach. But then the mashayikh, their approach is a little bit different. Their approach to forbidding the wrong is slightly different. They will forbid the wrong, but they will look at it in a different way. They will see, for example, alright, this person, he is stealing. Then you see, sometimes he's going to the wild coast, he's gambling. And sometimes you see that he's involved in interest also, and a whole collection of wrong he's involved in. gambling sometimes, sometimes interest, sometimes stealing, sometimes cheating. B route and C route, not what he's doing. So now how do I go and stop this person? So the mashayikh will look at it differently. So the one approach is, you tell him, you know, this insurance is haram, don't do this type of business. Right? And the other approach is to look what is the root of this wrong. What is the very essence of the wrong? So these mashayikh, they will look at the very root of the wrong. See, like they say that one old man came to one Hakim Sahib and is complaining, I don't get my sleep at night. So the Hakim Sahib says, it's because of old age. So I also suffer a lot of headaches. So it's also the cause is old age. My back is becoming hunched, I can't walk straight. Also old age. And I threw up a lot of phlegm also. That's also old age. So the old man gave this Hakim Sahib one slap. So whatever I'm saying, you're saying old age, old age, old age. You've got no other thing to tell me. So the Hakim Sahib very calmly says, this intolerant behavior is also old age. Cause of it is old age, see. So the Hakim is looking at it in a different perspective. What is the root? What is the root? Because that root is fasid, is corrupt, it's going to show in different ways. In headaches, throwing up phlegm, unsteady walk, instability, all that is on account of old age. So the root is the same, one and the same. You fix the root up, you fix the whole structure up. Right? So this mashayikh will look at the root. So say, alright, this person is involved in this, all he's involved in. Then the very root of it is hubbe mal, the excessive love, like I explained yesterday, the excessive love for wealth. One is a moderate love. That moderate love, you're not stopped. You're not, Allah doesn't forbid you from that moderate love. In Bukhari Sharif, it is reported, when the wealth began to pour into Medina Munawara from the different conquests, and wealth began to pour. So as Umar radiallahu anhu says, Allah Ta'ala, we know that this is made alluring to our disposition, to our nature. Our tabiat takes a liking to this. We see wealth, we feel comfortable. Our eyes and our hearts are attracted to it. Oh Allah Ta'ala, allow this to be used for your cause. We can't say that, oh Allah Ta'ala, extract this attraction from our hearts, from our minds. This love and this inclination that we have in our hearts, extracted, totally eliminated. That's going against the nature. It's within our nature to have this type of like, this type of love. Like the Sahaba Kiram, some of them were young and perhaps they couldn't find the suitable match. Maybe sometimes it's because of financial constraints, whatever it is. And they asked Rasulullah for permission to go and castrate themselves. So Rasulullah did not allow them to castrate. The reason is more or less similar, that this is what you are born with. This type of challenges you are born with. Just as you are born with this challenge, then you are also born with the challenge of being attracted towards wealth. Right? So if you eliminate it totally, then there won't be any challenge. And when there's no challenge, then there's no reward. Right? You see this pillar here. Does it ever steal? Here it's robbing anybody. Involving interest. Hey, pillar, you always involving interest. Haram. Ever see it? Stealing, robbing, cheating. Ever involved in that? Not involved. Ever involved in zina or anything. But then, when it's got no challenge, then there's no reward for it. And we don't praise that pillar also, say, hey, What a park pillar this is, you know. Never made zina in its life. Do you ever say that? What a pure pillar this is. That he never steal, he never made bad nazri, you know. Whole life. So long he's standing here in Talimuddin. So many people walk past and all that. But always he's got his gaze down. Doesn't look at anybody. Do you ever praise it like this? No. So the kamal is, the kamal and that achievement is when you have got those things, then you restrain. But if you don't have it, and then you restrain, then there's no kamal. If a small 5-year-old child, if he never commits zina, you say, hey, such a park, pure child this is, he never commits zina. See? They say about Uli Ahmad Raza Khan, you know, in his praise, such a great person he was, at the age of 4 or something, he saw a loose woman, you know, you get this loose street woman, bazaar woman. So in India, up till now you'll find the garms and all that, what they do is, small child, 3-4 year old, so they can't afford napkins, you know. So they put a long kurta for him. So his body is covered, and if he messes himself, the kurta and all is not really messed out. So they don't put a trouser, they just put a long kurta. So his sadr is covered, and if he messes, the mess will go right down, you see. Or if they need to clean him, it's easier for them to clean him, you see. So he saw this type of woman, small, 3-4 years of age. So when he saw that woman, straight away he took his kurta and he covered his face. They asked him, now, why do you do this? He says, see, the root of the cause of sins is the eyes. If the eyes go bad, then the heart goes bad. And when the heart goes bad, then the whole man goes corrupt. So that's why I covered my eyes. The poor chap, he didn't understand that. He's covering this and he's uncovering everything else. But now this is praise. Again, another word of praise they say about him is, he speaks about in his own kitab, Fatawa Razviya. All these things you'll find it there, you see. He says about breastfeeding, some masalas about breastfeeding. He says, breastfeeding, you have to stop, you know. Otherwise, if you leave the child, then the child will grow up with breastfeeding. So you'll have to stop the child at a certain point. If you don't do it, it'll grow up, it'll come, it'll be matured, but it'll not be able to resist that breast, see. So he says that, I was in a place, and I saw this my own self, I saw it. That girl, she opened the mother's skirt and she went into the breast and she began drinking. And big girl, 19, 20 years of age. So now this is his, on the one level this taqwa, on the other level that taqwa. That woman is an ajnabi, strange woman. And the strange woman, he's watching nicely how the daughter is uncovering the skirt and how she's going onto the breast and how she's drinking. So what we are speaking about, these mashayikh, they will look at the root of the cause. There's a root of this corruption. What is the root? What is the very root? Well, if you get the root right, say for example we eliminate the love of the world from the person's heart. When we eliminate it now it will be easy for him to leave out all that haram. Now you talk about interest, yeah, I left it out. Talk about gambling, left it out. You talk about selling or buying wine, etc., left it out. You talk about interest, he left it out. Talk about insurance, any type of insurance, then you left it out as well, right? So now it's easy for him to leave it out. Otherwise, if he's infected with that type of infection of the dunya, then now there is an istila that they use. Istila is fatwa shopping. What? Fatwa shopping. Shopping for fatwas that are convenient. Understand? I didn't find the masla convenient to myself, so I go to the next Mawlana. If they're not convenient here, then I go to the third person. And not by the third person, I go to the fourth person until I found the fatwa that I wanted. See. So now, really, what is the jar? What is the root? The root is this love. Love of the world. And that love of the world will not let me remain calm and remain composed. It will spur me up, it will stir me up. So these mashayikh understood that this is the jar, this is the root. You will appease yourself with anybody's fatwa, where are you going to get? Where are you going to get to? You're going to get anywhere? You're going to get anywhere. However you explain that masla, if it's haram, it's haram. Because of that Mawlana saying that this is halal, that haram doesn't become halal. If a Mawlana says that this is haram, or this is halal, because of him saying it's halal, does it become halal? It doesn't become halal. Say 5 minutes before iftar, some Mawlana says that you can have iftar. So that iftar becomes halal, it doesn't become halal. It doesn't become haram. No matter how he explains it, that iftar is haram for you at that time, 5 minutes before iftar, just 5 minutes. You stayed away from food, resisted food and everything the whole day. Now, at this moment, someone comes, some senior alim comes in, now you can have your iftar. Just 5 minutes before your iftar, you know, your heart will reject. Now, what he's saying is not right. But here, conveniently, you'll say, no, my heart is right, you know, there's a zarurat now. Is right. So this is not really, it's not deen, it's something else. It's that facade that's in our heart, but we don't know how to overcome that facade, that corruption that's in our hearts and in our minds, but we don't know how to overcome it. So now we'll go to that person that will give a fatwa in our favor, and we'll take it from him. One person came and is wanting to know about medical insurance, medical aid, medical insurance, etc. So I explained, do you know how it works? So he gave me some explanation. I said, nearly every medical product that they have got, medical aid or medical insurance product that they have got, we have studied it, right? And in the light of what we have studied, right, all seem to be the one and the same. There's no difference between a medical insurance and a motor car insurance or a life insurance. Look at the life insurance, look at the medical aid insurance, or look at the motor car insurance, all are the same. They follow the same principle. The principle that they will follow is you give your contributions to A, monthly contributions, and then B will see to it that in the case of a emergency, you need some emergent help, whatever it is, then he will provide that help. B will provide the help. But who are you giving your contributions to? You're giving it to A. And who is providing the help? B is providing the help. Right? Now, B will demand the remuneration from you. Because he's providing the help, he provided the help for 100,000 rands, right? So who's responsible to provide who is responsible to remunerate? You are responsible. He's provided the help, now you need to remunerate him, pay him, right? When you have to pay him, so now B comes about, A comes and says that no, don't worry, I will stand responsible for that 100,000. I will be responsible to pay that 100,000 on your behalf. Now this is the whole insurance. Now whether it's a medical aid, whether it's motor car, whether it is any type of insurance, but this is the principle that it works. Now the basic question is, that why is A indebted to look after you. Why is he obligated, under obligation, to pay for you? That's the question that will come about. You have given contributions, for example, to the value of 2,000 rands. And he is giving you, for the 2,000 rands, he is giving you 100,000. So why is he giving you that 100,000 in lieu of the 2,000? That's the one case scenario. The other case scenario is this, that say, for example, there was no emergency, there was no casualty for that period. So now all your contributions are lost. See, the one situation where he covered you for 100,000 rands and he gave it to you, and the other situation where all that money that you have been contributing towards him all have been forfeited and lost because you didn't use it. See? So what is this? There's the same element that is in motor car life is also found in medical aid. Now, why must you say that this is permissible? How can you say that? Now, this is what I say. This is the sickness that has gripped us today, and they call it fatwa shopping. See, looking for a fatwa that will appease you, that will suit you. And this is not new; it's old, but now it's become a little bit more common. See, everybody hears about it, and people want to hear this type of thing. They want to accept, they want to listen to what they want. They want to listen to what they want, you see. So, this thing is nothing new. One person happened in India, he wanted to get, he fell in love with his mother-in-law and he wants to get married to her. Right? And he seemed to be a little bit muttaqi. He seems to be muttaqi, but now he's fallen in love. And who he wants to marry? He wants to marry his mother-in-law. So now he goes to one alim shopping around. Eventually he found the alim of his taste. So that alim says, you know, it's permissible for you to get married to your mother-in-law. But it will cost you so much. You see me right and I will work it out for you. Right. You see me right, and I will work that thing. Work it out for you. That's exactly what's happening now in these financial organizations. That they will work it out for you. They will show you a module where it becomes permissible. See. So he took out a module for the permissibility of marrying his mother-in-law. How? He says, all right. Says, you see these people from the village, they get married, they're all jahils. Day in and day out, the type of words and statements that are coming out from their tongues, all kufr, shirk, everything. So when they were mushriks, when this woman was a mushrik, then her nikah was not valid. In the first place, right? Her nikah was not valid to this Muslim, right? And the Mawlana that was conducting the nikah at that time, he made a mistake as well, because he did not make them renew their faith, renew their iman. In India, in fact, here also this should happen. Some place I've seen that at the time the nikah is taking place, then they'll make the groom recite the kalima. Because now they were in jahalat, and in jahalat they may have said some words. So now to secure the nikah, what they'll do, make him read the kalimas again. So he's read the kalimas, now he's a Muslim, so the nikah will be valid. So now he says the nikah was not valid. Why? Because the mullah that was conducting the nikah, he did not recite the kalima. When he did not recite the kalima, or suggest to him to recite the kalima, then the nikah was not valid. So they were living without nikah. He was living with this woman without nikah. Right? Then as far as hurmat and musaharat is concerned, that is just the view of one imam. It's not a consensus of opinion of all the imams. Is it consensus, is it agreed upon with all the imams? No, it is just the opinion of one imam. So we don't have to go by it. It's not compulsory that we, it's not a farz ain that we go by it. Because it's not agreed upon by all the imams. See. Now this is what is called fatwa shopping. See. Somehow you legalized it, you found a module to say that this is permissible. See. So, and people want to, what they want? They want to listen to what they like. They like this now. Now I got this permissible, man. I got it right. See? I got it right. So I'm listening to what I want. Now this is dangerous. It's very, very dangerous. See? The ulama of the past, then a lot of things they would say, don't do it, not permissible. And they would have a broad vision. And the broad vision was saddan lil abwab, that we will close the doors. We're not opening a door. We're going to open up a door, then we will not be able to control things afterwards. We'll not be able to contain things afterwards. We're starting it off, opening a door, and then we can't contain things after that. Someone explained that the advantage of the virtues of keeping a radio. The virtues of keeping a radio. He says now that we've got a radio in the house or in the family, now there are several women that are driving. That are going around driving. Just now, all of them are within their homes. قَرْنَ فِي بُيُوتِكُمْ, living within the house. Right? Now, they are actually driving. They're moving around. So now, what's the limit? There, the ulama of the past, you know, you stay in the house, remain simple, make sabr, stay in the house. Now this woman has become the woman of the street. And then they will find evidence to prove that it is permissible for that woman to drive. Say, this Sahabi woman, she rode a camel, and she rode a camel. So if she rode a camel, then why is it not permissible for her, for this woman to drive a car? Right? Then all the corruption that goes with it now, who's going to control that corruption? Breakup of marriage. Yesterday, last night, there was a problem. Every now and then you'll find. See, with this freedom, last night, Ramzan, the man is married for about 15 years and he's complaining that we are married for 15 years, got two, three, whatever children we got, but now the wife is interested in some other man and she is demanding divorce. She's interested in someone else after 15 years of marriage. But where it's stemming from is stemming from this point. If the Sahaba Kiram woman, some of them had rode on a camel in a time of absolute need. Right? The life was so constrained at the time. We hear of Hazrat Zubair radiallahu anhu and his wife radiallahu anha, and she's going to do the chores of the house, right? That puts of the dates and all that. She's going it, she's crushing and she's coming. And Zubair radiallahu anhu couldn't afford it. They couldn't afford it, right? But she's living in Haya, etc., and she can't manage it. But she had to go out. There was no way out for her but to do this. Now, you take this one isolated hadith, and then say, no, it's permissible. Sahaba Kiram woman went out. Now, who's going to control that fitna after that? The fitna that will come after this, who will control it? Who will manage it? Someone was discussing that masla about women. And them cutting their hair, you see. So I explained, maybe you don't find a hadith that is to the level of justification. You know, when you can establish something, you can't find a hadith to that level, right? To that level, that way you can establish a farz or establish a wajib. You can't find a hadith to that level. But I want to show you two things. One is this. that in this day and time that we are living in, this trend of cutting the hair is a trend of the Muslims or kuffar. Who is it? Whose custom it is? It is the work of the kuffar, right? Number two, there is, at times it can reach up to the point of mushabahat bil rijal, you imitating men, right? One is mushabahat bil kuffar and fusaq. Then it can reach that point. And the third thing that I want to bring to your attention is this, that look at all practicing Muslim women in the past, till this age. What was their way? Did they ever cut their hair? No. Maybe split ends or something, they cut up a little bit, or maybe at the time of Umrah they cut up. Now on the radio, permissible. Now after that, this woman is going to cut hair, right? Who's going to go and control it? Can you go and control it? This ulama of the past said, no, it's impermissible, forget it, leave it out, khalas. So that whole chapter was left out, khalas, it was finished, sorted out. Now, this type of permissive, you see, permissive nature. Then someone came out with digital. After that, when the digital came out, apart from several people breaking their rozas, looking at porn sites, that was one side, one story. Now people began to confuse the whole thing with photography. Photography and digital, see, one is the same thing. Digital is also permissible, so photography is permissible. So several people, in fact, ulama came and told me that we went holidaying to our uncle's house or mamaji's house, this so and so. All right. Some of their families will be bidat inclined, whatever it is. At least two people explained to me. We went to one uncle's house, auntie's house, and we seen a photo of someone. So we found out from the uncle, what is this? No, it's our Peer Sahab. So every day in the morning or every time we have a problem, we go near the photograph and make dua there. See? We make dua for any problem we got, any difficulty overcame us, so we make dua, we get barakat out of this. So on the one end you allow all this, and then all this fasadat comes, who's going to control it? Who's going to take care of it? So this old school of thought, and the way they took care of all these things here, they had a lot of wisdom. The outlook was different. It may have seemed to be a little bit stringent, but it could cope with the challenges of time. Their way and their method could cope with the challenges of time. And this new brand that they are bringing about can't cope. It can't cope with the challenges of time. And the work of an alim is to save that person's deen. Not to open doors and then let him go and do anything and everything. That's not the work of an alim. So Rasulullah ﷺ came here and he saw what were the root of the sin, where this thing is stemming from. He saw it, he examined all that. He examined those roots. And then after examining careful scrutiny, then Rasulullah ﷺ made certain statements. If this infection gets into your system, this infection of love of wealth, then it's going to be dangerous, it's going to be disastrous. So how do you cure this? How do you eliminate this? Okay. The second disaster he saw was just by intiqam, okay, that you want to take revenge. Someone did you something, so you want to get back at him. Whichever way, you get a chance and you want to get back at the person. Somehow you want to get back at the person. Verbally or physically, financially, somehow you want to get back at the person, but you must get back at the person. So this is the second thing. He's done you something and you want to get back at him. So that's within your tabiat. But the hadith is saying that وَمَا زَادَ اللَّهُ بِعَفْوٍ وَمَا زَادَ اللَّهُ عَبْدًا بِعَفْوٍ إِلَّا عِزًّا. That if you're going to forgive and you're going to overlook, then you're going to be more exalted in your respect. Your integrity, your respect is going to be more exalted. You're not going to lose anything. You're not going to lose anything. See? And this masla of saddan lil abwab is not from now, it's from the time of Sahaba Ikram. Once person comes and complains, Huzaifa radiallahu anhu, he sends a message to Umar, Amir al-Mu'mineen, or Usman al-Ghani radiallahu anhu, that you better check these people. Now, we are here in Azerbaijan, Armenia, we are here, and people are reading the Quran Sharif as they have received from the Sahaba. This person is reading it in one style, the other person is reading it in another style. So this person is saying, you are kafir, and that person is saying, he is kafir. So you better check that out. Otherwise, just now they will pull out swords for each other, because he's considering and believing that person to be a kafir, and that person is believing the same. So now, Saddan lil Abwab, Usman al-Ghani is doing something about the script of the Quran Sharif, how it must be recited, how it must be preserved. So you see also Rasmi Khat-e Usmani from that time till this day. Whereas Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam had allowed the different recitations, he allowed it. He allowed it, had made it permissible. But then now they made ijma, you just read it in this one single script. But what was the outlook? What was the reason? You understand? Look at the outlook. The outlook now is look at the broader interests of the Ummah. The broader interests of the Ummah is they must read it in one script. Although now they will say that the other qiraats also can be contained in this one script. That's a different issue. But he specified that this is the script that's going to go from now onwards. There's no other script. So what was this? So this was the broad outlook they had for the Ummah, the concern of the Ummah. And on account of that, they put certain structures in place. They put the structures in place. Now then you get the second class of people who have got this permissive nature, you see, ibahiyat. Legalize, everything legalize, permissible. So now this is dangerous. So that facade, that hubb dunya, now you found some type of expression for it. You found vent for it, you found expression for it, some room now, how you can vent that feeling. You go and do this, go and do this. But you'll be able to do it now. Before you weren't able to do it, now you are able to do it. See? So as a result now, what's happening now amongst the public now? You see, one is at the level of an alim. But the public, they can't understand what is the difference between an Islamic bank and a conventional bank. They can't understand the difference. And you'll find hundreds of them, scores of them saying, if they're giving you a better deal in this conventional bank, than this Islamic bank, they're giving you a better deal. Let's go there. See? They're also saying some permissible things also they're talking about. So let's go there now. See? So the whole thing now is confused, you see. Because if that alim is speaking, right, perhaps to a certain degree he's got hope of Allah Ta'ala. But the banks, how they're looking at it? They're looking at it as a business venture. They got nothing to do with Islam. They got no love for Islam, they're enemies of Islam. They got nothing to do with Islam. They're looking at it purely as a business venture. And we get that, if we secure that business, how much we're going to get? You know, we're looking at this, only one section, that is business, this motor cars, and how many motor cars are sold, what amount of money is made for 1 year. Only from the Muslim public, approximately 200 million yearly. That's the amount of business they make only from the Muslim sector. Now forget the rest of the public, how much they're making. 200 million from the Muslim. So when these banks are seeing that there's so much of money to be made, then why shouldn't we also jump the bandwagon? Somehow they will legalize. So the idea is not that khawf of Allah Ta'ala, not that fikr of akhirat, not that resentment for interest, but how to secure that deal, how to secure that business. See? So this is the first thing we need to see now, alright. This, where is it starting off? Where is it stemming from? Hubba dunya or not? And the second thing is just by intiqam, see. To get back at someone. That emotion, you know, is having the better over you. He's done this to me. He said this about me. And how do I get back to him? So Rasulullah made out that this was the second cause and the second root for the major problems in this world. So the treatment for it is to forgive. He's hurt you, he's done something to you. But all right, whatever he's done according to his understanding. His immaturity, his naivety, whatever it was, he did it according to his naivety. But must I also stoop down to that level and lose my character, lose my discipline on account of his bad manners? He showed bad manners to me. He was abrupt, he was abusive, he was aggressive. Now must I also stoop down to that level and also behave in the same manner? Or must I act in some better, more disciplined, more dignified way? How must I act? How must I behave? So if you're going to act in a more dignified way, you're going to forgive the person. So this will actually bring honor to you. Rasulullah, he forgave the Quraysh, right? So to this day, we talk of Rasulullah, that he forgave all those people that were hungry, thirsty for his blood, expelled them in the Sahaba-i-Kiram, hundreds of Sahaba-i-Kiram from Makkah Mukarramah. What they didn't do, expropriated their properties, what they did. But Rasulullah forgave one and all of them, he forgave them. All of them. One after the other, he forgave them. So this we hold as a respect. It adds to the honor and the respect, the integrity of Rasulullah, as to his shan. The idea of the various awliya-i-kiram and how they acted upon the same hadith. You hear of Junaid Baghdadi, Ibrahim bin Adham, Rahmatullah alayhi, and the various other awliya-i-kiram, and how they acted upon the same hadith according to their circumstances, but how they acted upon this hadith. So the second aspect of this hadith and the second cause of and the second root for all these problems is just by intiqam. Someone said something, someone did you something, and you want to get back at him. Allah Ta'ala tawfiq nasib kana.